Today is Tuesday, October 5th, and you're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, U.S. moves to reset relations with France.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken had a 40-minute one-on-one unscheduled meeting with French President Emmanuel Macron.
Plus, Pandora Papers exposes more politicians than pop stars.
Among the most startling revelations in the Pandora Papers is the hidden wealth of the president of Azerbaijan, Ilham Aliyev.
Also, Belarus president strengthens alliance with Russia. Our top story today is in France. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is in Paris as the Biden administration seeks to repair damage to relations caused by excluding America's oldest ally from a new Indo-Pacific security initiative. Blinken was meeting with French Foreign Minister Jean Villedrian and President Emmanuel Macron's National Security Advisor on Tuesday to try to restore trust between the countries. The administration has acknowledged that the announcement of a three-way agreement between Australia, Britain, and the U.S., known as UNCLOS, was handled poorly. France reacted with fury to the announcement, which scuttled a multi-billion dollar submarine contract it had with Australia. French officials called it a stab in the back by allies and have said it will take more time and work to overcome. For more, I reached reporter and analyst Catherine Field.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken had a 40-minute one-on-one unscheduled meeting with French President Emmanuel Macron. Neither of their aides had said this meeting was going to take place. It had been known that Blinken would speak with one of Emmanuel Macron's aides. So it came as not a big surprise to us that the two had met. What is interesting is it really does show that the United States does want to make those moves that France is saying it should make to restore relations. It's going to be a very delicate time over the next, say, 2-3 weeks when the Americans try to patch up ties. The French really do feel as though all the work has to be done by the American side on this. They say that it was all their fault for what they're describing as this stab in the back for the relations between the two. So very interesting, of course, that Secretary of State Blinken made the first move. He's a fluent French speaker. The Elysee Palace had welcomed his appointment as Secretary of State because they felt that someone who had gone to high school here in Paris would have more of an affinity with the French way of thinking about foreign policy. And it's also interesting that his visit comes just a day after former Secretary of State John Kerry was also in Paris. Again, another Francophone, another member of President Joe Biden's cabinet who has close ties with France and speaks French fluently.
Sounds like optimistic note on all these meetings and all these discussions. Where do you think this is all headed? Will the relationship ever be what it used to be?
It will take time. Let's have a look at what the French Foreign Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian said before Secretary of State Blinken arrived in Paris. He said the meetings will identify stages which will allow a return of confidence. So it's certainly on the road to it, but the French are really still very angry at the Americans because their bottom line is they feel the Americans did not understand the French and do not understand Europe. So it will be a long way before they're back to normal. Apparently, at this meeting with Emmanuel Macron this morning, Secretary of State Blinken discussed the potential for joint projects that could possibly be announced at a later date by the two presidents. But really, it's no further than that. And now all eyes will be on whether that summit takes place, that meeting that's supposed to take place within the next month here in Paris between French President Emmanuel Macron and American President Joe Biden. I think if that happens, then we'll see that relations are on some sort of path towards a normalization.
World leaders, politicians, and pop stars among thousands of individuals revealed to be concealing huge wealth through a network of anonymous companies. The revelations, known as the Pandora Papers, are part of a huge leak of almost 12 million files from the archives of several legal firms, which shed light on the secret world of offshore finance. From London, VOA's Henry Ridgewell reports.
Among the most startling revelations in the Pandora Papers is the hidden wealth of the president of Azerbaijan, Ilham Aliyev, and his family. The leaks show the Aliyev family and their associates traded property in Britain worth $544 million over the past 15 years. Rachel Davies-Tecker is with the anti-corruption campaign group Transparency International.
Since this family took power in 1993, they have taken control of many of the country's vital industries and its natural resources and used that to amass wealth. And this has been done at the expense of the people of that country. These are not events without harm to people. There are people who are suffering because their leaders are taking resources which should be shared out.
Czech Prime Minister Andrej Babiš used anonymous offshore companies to finance the purchase of a $22 million property in France. Babiš is competing in a general election this week. In a TV debate Sunday, he defended his actions. Much of the activity revealed by the Pandora Papers, including the use of offshore companies, is legal. There is one thread that is common to many of the revelations: London, the British capital, and the territories linked to it, such as the British Virgin Islands, offer a hidden network of legal structures designed to conceal who really owns the money, says Davies-Tecker.
You can buy UK property anonymously if you use a company that's registered and formed in an overseas territory where there is currently secrecy. We also have luxury services on offer to the global elite. And unfortunately, we have a concerning amount of professionals, accountants, lawyers, estate agents, who are happy to help corrupt and criminal actors launder and hide and manage their wealth.
Britain's ruling Conservative Party has become embroiled in the accusations after the leaks revealed party donors were linked to alleged corruption. Chancellor Rishi Sunak Monday denied that London's reputation on tax avoidance was shameful and said the government's track record on tackling global corruption was strong. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko is seeking to strengthen his alliance with Russia's Vladimir Putin to ease his government's international isolation following a brutal crackdown on political opponents following last year's rigged elections. One sign of this alliance joined military maneuvers on Belarus territory. Elizabeth Shenif narrates this report by Ricardo Markina in Minsk.
Russian troops opened fire just a few kilometers from the border with Poland, NATO's eastern boundary. These military maneuvers in September on Belarusian soil, called Zapad 2021, aimed to test the ability of Minsk and Moscow to operate as a single force, the so-called Russian-Belarusian State Union.
It's a simulation of repulsing an aggression, an invasion to the territory of the Union state from the Western operational direction.
The Belarusian leadership wants to further strengthen ties with Moscow in the face of NATO's presence in Eastern Europe. Analysts say there is reason for concern among some Western powers.
The military and political cooperation is becoming more profound. NATO is concerned about the increasing Russian military presence in Belarusian territory.
These maneuvers are a step toward the further integration of Belarus into the Russian Federation's sphere of influence. They also represent Moscow's willingness to support the Belarusian regime, whose military capabilities are otherwise limited.
Belarus has a very small, very weak military because Lukashenko spent on defense 2 times less than Estonia.
The show of Russian support comes as Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko finds himself under sanctions and isolated for repressing his political opponents. They, in turn, denounce Russia's support.
Russia has been sponsoring Lukashenko's regime for years. And Russia continues to protect this regime by all possible diplomatic means on the international arena. And there is a close cooperation between Russian security services and Belarusian security services.
In Minsk, nothing remains of last year's massive anti-Lukashenko demonstrations that followed rigged elections. The government's repression has forced the opposition into silence or exile, and in the city's streets, there is now only room for expressions of patriotic pride. For Ricardo Marquina in Minsk, Elizabeth Chernev, VOA News.
Taiwan needs to be on alert for China's, quote, over-the-top, unquote, military activities, the premier said on Tuesday, after a record 56 Chinese aircraft flew into Taiwan's air defense zone. Flora Bloody Watson of Reuters reports.
Taiwan said Tuesday it needs to be on high alert for China's military activities. That was a stark warning from the territory's premier, Zhu Zhangchang. He spoke a day after Beijing dispatched a record number of fighter jets and bombers to Taiwan.
Taiwan definitely needs to be on alert. China is increasingly over the top. The world has also seen China's repeated violations of regional peace and pressure on Taiwan, so democratic countries have repeatedly issued warnings that our countrymen have to be self-reliant.
Since Friday, Taiwan has reported nearly 150 Chinese Air Force planes in the southern and southwestern part of its air defense zone. Taipei calls the repeated nearby military activities grey zone warfare, designed to both wear out Taiwan's forces and also test their responses. The show of might from Beijing coincided with a key patriotic holiday, China's National Day. China claims Taiwan as its own territory and has not ruled out the possible use of force to achieve unification. The island, which broke away from the mainland in 1949, rejects Beijing's claims and has its own democratically elected government. It also has the support of the U.S., which has condemned China's recent military actions as destabilizing. Japan has also weighed in, saying it was watching the situation closely and hoped China and Taiwan would resolve their differences through talks. Taiwan has lived under the threat of invasion since the defeated Republic of China government fled to the island after losing a civil war with the communists.
That's Flora Bradley Watson of Reuters. New Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida said on Tuesday that he received a, quote, strong message from President Joe Biden about the United States' commitment to defending the disputed East China Sea islet known as the Senkaku Islands in Japan. In phone talks on Tuesday morning that lasted roughly 20 minutes, the allies also confirmed their cooperation towards achieving a free and open Indo-Pacific, Kishida told reporters at the Prime Minister's official residence. Japan hopes that Taiwan and China are able to resolve their issues peacefully between themselves, said Foreign Minister Toshimitsu Motegi on Tuesday, adding that Japan will continue to monitor the situation in the Taiwan Strait. Taiwan, which China claims as its territory, has faced massive stepping up of pressure from Beijing since Friday, with 148 Chinese aircraft flying into Taiwan's air defense zone over a four-day period. As the U.S. and its partners warn that time is running out for a new nuclear deal with Iran, Israeli officials and analysts warn Tehran is very close to becoming a threshold nuclear power. Former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak, in a VOA interview, said that Israel must reassess its response. Linda Granstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
When new Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett met with U.S. President Joe Biden in Washington recently, both leaders said that Iran was at the top of the agenda. This American-Israeli cooperation is crucial, according to former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak in an exclusive interview with VOA.
We have to sit behind closed doors with the American administration and first of all agree on a common language. What it means breakthrough, what it means a threshold, what means a nuclear weapon. And then to make sure that we have enough intelligence in order to know what really happens. And then to clarify the contingency, should do what, independently or together, either a covered step or even a surgical operation.
Since then, U.S. President Trump pulled out of the Iran nuclear deal in 2018, the UN nuclear watchdog, IAEA, says Iran has stepped up its uranium enrichment and prevented access of international inspectors to its nuclear facilities. Iran's nuclear program sparked a harsh warning by Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett in his recent speech at the UN General Assembly.
Iran's nuclear program has hit a watershed moment, and so has our tolerance. Words do not stop centrifuges from spinning. There are those in the world who seem to view Iran's pursuit of nuclear weapons as an inevitable reality, as a done deal, or they've just become tired of hearing about it. Israel doesn't have that privilege. We cannot tire. We will not tire. Israel will not allow Iran to acquire a nuclear weapon.
The UN Nuclear Agency says Iran has started enriching uranium to 60%, but the next stage of enrichment to 90% will be harder to detect, says Ehud Barak, who was also chief of staff of the Israel Defense Forces and defense minister.
The enrichment from 60% to 90% to what's needed for military use is a very short, very easy, can be done in isolated small place, either spread over civilian areas or even buried very deep in some old mine, whatever. You lose contact with the operation. If they have enough material for even few weapons and reach to military level, it's true that they need to develop the weapon itself. It's true that they will have to fit into a head of a missile, but we, the rest of the world, the IAEA in Vienna, won't be able to control it or inspect it anymore.
Over the past few years, news reports have said Israel has conducted sabotage attacks against Iran's nuclear program. Recently, the chief of staff for the Israel Defense Forces declared that plans for a military strike have been greatly accelerated. Some analysts say that Israeli action must be coordinated with other powers. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Jerusalem.
This is the Voice of America. Police in Bangladesh say they arrested a suspect in the killing of a key Rohingya leader who was a prominent voice for the repatriation of the refugees to Myanmar. Mohibullah, who was known by one name, had been an international advocate for Rohingya rights, including traveling to the White House for a meeting on religious freedom in 2019. He was fatally shot late Tuesday at a refugee camp in southern Bangladesh, where about 700,000 Rohingya Muslims had fled persecution in Myanmar. The head of France's Catholic Bishops' Conference is asking forgiveness from the estimated 330,000 victims of child sex abuse by church clerics and lay staff found in a groundbreaking report. The report was released Tuesday after extensive research in France's first major reckoning with the issue. The president of the Conference of Bishops of France, Eric de Lamonis Beaufort, said Tuesday, quote, "We are appalled," unquote, at the conclusions of the report and the number of victims. You are listening to International Edition of the Voice of America. I am Chinedu for broadcasting from Washington, D.C. The UN Children's Fund reports more than 150 million children worldwide suffer from mental health disorders. In this year's State of the World's Children's Report, UNICEF warns many conditions that are worsening under the impact of COVID-19 could potentially be life-threatening if left untreated. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
UNICEF says children are likely to suffer most from the months-long COVID-related restrictions, school closures, and separation from family and friends. Latest estimates show more than 1 in 7 adolescents aged 10 to 19 live with a diagnosed mental disorder globally. Another statistic finds nearly 46,000 adolescents commit suicide every year. UNICEF spokesman James Elder tells VOA most of these conditions are not being addressed. This because of the stigma attached to mental illness and the lack of government investment. He says only about 2% of government health budgets are allocated to mental health spending globally.
20%, again, of young people are saying that they are feeling depressed or have very little interest in things. That, again, is a clear indication of the impact that COVID's been having. There's a whole range of mental disorders, anxiety and depression and bipolar, that young people are suffering from. But of course, that threat of suicide is of course the most grave for any family to watch for.
UNICEF reports more than 1.6 billion children have suffered some loss of education because of pandemic lockdowns. Elder says children's mental health often deteriorates when there is a disruption to their daily routines, such as going to school, engaging in recreational activities, and socializing with friends. These problems, he says, affect children all over the world, in rich and poor countries alike.
Of course, if you are from a country where you don't have connectivity, or you don't have a laptop, or one of your parents is on $200 a month, then of course those stresses, that anxiety, that risk of slipping into a mental health disorder is much greater. And in some of those world's poorest countries, governments are spending less than a dollar per person treating mental health conditions.
UNICEF notes the cost of ignoring mental disorders is enormous. It cites a new analysis by the London School of Economics, which indicates nearly $390 billion in human capital is lost every year due to mental disorders among young people. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Researchers in Australia have shown a bacteria can sterilize and eradicate a disease-carrying mosquito that is responsible for spreading dengue, yellow fever and Zika. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
3 million male Aedes aegypti, or yellow fever mosquitoes, were released in the trial at three sites in northern Queensland state. They were reared at James Cook University in Cairns and sterilised with a naturally occurring bacteria called Wolbachia. Researchers say the bacteria appears to have changed part of the male insect's reproductive biology, so that female mosquitoes that mate with them lay eggs that don't hatch. The flying insects were released over a 20-week period in 2018. Mosquito numbers subsequently fell by more than 80%. When scientists returned the following year, they found one of the trial areas had almost no mosquitoes. Nigel Beebe is an associate professor at the University of Queensland and a research scientist at the Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organisation, or CSIRO. He hopes the sterilisation method will eventually be used in developing countries.
We wanted to show in a developed country that the technology was robust. We could mass rear mosquitoes. It's not very expensive to mass rear mosquitoes. And it's really the separation of the males and the females.
The Australian team plans to use a similar technique to suppress the virus-spreading Asian tiger mosquito that's become established in the Torres Strait in northern Australia.
At the moment, we have to use relatively sophisticated technology to do that, but we are now trying to build something that is much more robust and can be used in tropical countries and will be relatively cheap to actually be able to separate the males from the females. The mass rearing of the mosquitoes is actually pretty cheap to do. So I think absolutely we'll have application in developing countries.
Researchers elsewhere are looking at ways to use sterile male mosquitoes to curb the spread of malaria. But Associate Professor Beebe has said it was a complicated challenge. More than 40% of people worldwide suffer from mosquito-borne diseases. The Australian team hopes its environmentally friendly mosquito control method will help tackle current and future outbreaks of dengue and other debilitating diseases. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Pope Francis and dozens of religious leaders have signed a joint appeal to governments to commit to ambitious targets at the coming UN climate conference. AP correspondent Charles de la Desma reports.
The Pope thanks religious leaders for sharing his desire for a deepened dialogue among themselves and with scientific experts on the need for action ahead of the COP26 climate talks. The appeal, signed at a formal ceremony in the Apostolic Palace, says, "We've inherited a garden. We must not leave a desert to our children." For the religious leaders, care for the environment is a moral imperative towards future generations and to support communities most vulnerable to climate change. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
The Nobel Prize for Physics has been awarded to scientists from Japan, Germany and Italy. Shukuro Manabe and Klaus Hasselmann were cited for their work in, quote, "a physical modeling of Earth's climate, quantifying variability and reliably predicting global warming," unquote. The second half of the prize was awarded to Giorgio Parisi for, quote, "the discovery of the interplay of disorder and fluctuations in physical systems from atomic to planetary scales," unquote. The winners were announced Tuesday by the Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu from Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great evening.
On the next Straight Talk Africa. What does a free and fair election really look like? And what are the actual signs of a rigged voting system? We'll look at examples from across Africa and other parts of the world. We'll also examine whether complaints about election outcomes can make people lose faith in democracy. Join me, Heidi Adams, on the next